Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is Sophia Wilson.
Good afternoon, Stuart.
Good afternoon, Sophia. Before we started recording, actually, we were just complaining about the great British weather. The summer has turned decidedly British.
Yes, just disappeared. The kids are broken up from school, so that means pouring rain.
Yeah, as soon as summer holidays start, the rain comes. And so Sophia was had a birthday party for her daughter Lyra, and all the outside plans had to be cancelled. So lots and lots of people in her flat.
Yeah, lots. Yeah, so 70 plus, I think we had in our quite small London terrace house. But thankfully, a combination of a Spider-Man bouncy castle and the boat gazebo saw us through. So we sort of created a kind of dry tunnel all the way through to our garden.
Where does the boat gazebo live year round?
In the basement.
In the basement. Ah, gotcha. Okay.
If you're ever in need of it, that's where you've got to go looking. Those in the know.
Good to know. Well, I've got other reasons to complain about this terrible weather is because, as you all know, faithful listeners of the podcast, I am in despair because the Ashes were retained by Australia at Old Trafford in Manchester the other day. The last 2 days of the test match were corrupted by rain, and it meant that Australia kept the famous Ashes urn wholly undeservedly because England were all over them in that test match. But some colleagues and I are taking some guests, some VIPs to the Oval watch the first day of the fifth test this week on Thursday. So I can't wait, although I have just checked the weather and it is
raining.
Some rain.
So you may or may not be watching any cricket. I mean, the only good thing about it being rained off is it then gives us something to complain about until the next Ashes. We can feel hard done by.
Yeah.
Which makes the British happy. I mean, only our happiest when we can complain.
That's true. Yeah, there was a lot of whinging. And the Australian press was funny because they were just, they were loving all the whinging poms they could write about. And there was an awful lot of whinging, but thoroughly justified whinging. For people who know nothing about cricket, that's all going to be complete gibberish. So apologies.
We're, 5 minutes in and we've discussed bouncy castles and cricket. Yeah. We've really lost our way with this podcast.
Well, we're recording this at the end of the day, which is always a bad start because we make lots of mistakes. And also I've been in the States for the last few days. We did an event up in the Hamptons on Shelter Island. The very top of Long Island, and the weather was absolutely stunning. But I got back this morning, so I'm a bit fatigued as well. So my brain is working at about 60% right now.
Yeah, bear with us, please.
Let me talk about the Hamptons, because I'd never been there before. Obviously, been to New York before. We've run events in New York before for Boat International, but I'd never been up Long Island. And I'm in love. I mean, just completely besotted. So I did learn, we spoke to some native, well, almost native Shelter Islanders, and they rejected the designation of Hamptonites. They say Shelter Island's not part of the Hamptons. So our big summer party in the Hamptons invitation.
Yeah, I was going to say, got the branding a bit wrong for that one, didn't we then?
Immediate faux pas, but we've learned our lesson. Hamptons, just beachy wonderland up there, and then these quaint old towns, and Sag Harbor is just gorgeous and just absolutely buzzing. It's a really, really busy place, especially now. Loads and loads of boats around, just beautiful properties. And then you take this little ferry, this kind of 5-minute ferry across to Shelter Island, from nearby Sag Harbor, and Shelter Island is like stepping back in time. It is just so old world and charming, and the houses are all kind of shingled and made of wood, and everyone is just so nice to each other and polite. It's very different from driving in New York, because people actually let you in. If they see you anywhere near the side of the road, they'll stop the car 100 meters away and let you cross the road in front of them. I mean, it's just an amazing, amazing place. So I was, Shelter Island, big.
Yeah, I've only ever been further north. I've been to Nantucket and up that stretch, but I've never done the Hamptons. But yeah, you're selling it well.
Yeah, and the weather was just impeccable. So I should mention the event, really. So the Boat International Summer Party in the Hamptons, we took over the lawn of this wonderful hotel on Shelter Island called the Prydwen, which has just undergone a really big refurb, and it's a gorgeous hotel. The sun sets over the water off its lawn, and it just lights the sky the most incredible, unreal colours. And we had a spectacular sunset, and we had some of the guests had brought their boats and just hung them right off the hotel, off the lawn. And it was just a really special, balmy, casual evening. And that's the other key to the to Shelter Island, is it's very, very casual. We often make the mistake of sometimes our events in the States.
You're so not allowed to say this. You say this every time, and I can hear our events director Claire kind of weeping.
Well, Claire was
we don't make mistakes. We do a variety of different events.
No jackets. Yeah, variety of different events. But this one was very, very no jackets. It was great. And everyone turned up very casual. And we had a great evening. It was fantastic. We had some wonderful partners. And one of the partners for the event was this the second oldest watchmaker in the world, Jacquet Droz. And they gifted me, or the company, this enormous clock that I'll bring into the office tomorrow. So we'll have to find somewhere on the wall. But it was quite an exercise getting that through security and JFK and then back to the UK. But it's a beautiful thing.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that. I have been busy while you've been away. I've had two trips with both UK based. So I've been to Wilmslow.
Where's that?
Cheshire.
Gotcha.
So I went up to go and see our friends at Volley Group, who obviously we've spoken about before, and I did the interview with Ian Flanagan, the CEO, earlier this year as well. So that was a nice 3 hours on a kind of British train, which those of you that know British trains will know they're not a thing of delight. And then actually, I can't complain, because on Wednesday, I did get to go to the Gold Cup semi-finals of the polo. And that actually was a beautiful summer's day that day, it decided to be, courtesy of the Cowdrey Estate, which is obviously where it's held. So that was a lovely British day out, but not quite the same.
That is quintessentially British, isn't it? I've never, ever watched any polo. I have to correct that at some point. So yeah,
you have to wear a jacket, probably, Stuart.
Yeah, that's a jacket. That's a jacket event. Sounds like it to me. So okay, so that sounds great. I just wanted to also just quickly thank. One of the days we were there, Rudenko, the owner of J-Craft, the Swedish manufacturers of these gorgeous launches, these beautifully flared, just so pretty, these boats. He kind of bases himself on Shelter Island for the summer and has a demo boat out there. So he took us out one day and blasted around and saw Shelter Island from the water, which was lovely too. I'll be racing back the first opportunity. In fact, I'm hoping to go back to Newport in September. And if I get a chance to come over to Shelter Island again in Sag Harbor, I will make that effort. So on a more serious note, I hope you've had a chance to listen to the interview I did with Rob McCallum and Patrick Leahy from EOS and Triton, respectively, about the OceanGate sub-disaster. We published that last week. And it was just a really revealing and wise insight from some of these guys who take deep sea exploration and safety incredibly seriously and have a lot of experience in that area. Just looking at what went wrong, how it could have been avoided, what needs to happen to make sure nothing like that ever happens again. And it was the first time, we were very privileged actually, because Patrick lost a dear friend in the incident. He's a good friend of Rob's too, a French deep sea Titanic expert. So they Patrick particularly hadn't spoken to the press until that point. So it was great that he broke his fast with us. And it was just a good hour's discussion about the OceanGate submersible.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet. But what were some of your kind of key takeaways from it?
Well, I mean, the thing that was most striking was how, it was clearly they were quite emotional about the loss of their friend in the incident. Also, Hamish Harding, who Rob had worked with in the past and had dived Challenger deep with. And also, there was anger because they were both of the firm opinion that the ocean, well, I mean, Patrick didn't mince his words. He said it was an experimental monstrosity that should never have carried passengers. He was utterly damning of the submersible that Ocean Gate built. It wasn't fit for purpose. It wasn't classed crucially. So it had no third party authority checking it out. It was basic. It was, the materials used, they didn't agree with. So in all sorts of ways, they were quite damning of the Ocean Gate sub, and rightly, because they both said it was an accident waiting to happen, or rather a tragedy waiting to happen, and that's exactly what unfolded. So I do urge you to go back and have a listen to that, because those two guys, there aren't two people on the planet who know more about getting to the bottom of the ocean than Patrick and Rob. So they really are the authorities, and so we're very happy. Well, I was very happy they agreed to sit down and have a chat through it. And actually, it leads me on quite neatly to James Cameron. So so James Cameron last year, I think it was last year, invested in Triton, along with Ray Dalio, the New York investor. They bought a stake in Triton and have lots of wonderful plans for that great company. And back in February, actually, I spoke to James Cameron, or Jim, as he made me call him, which felt very strange and familiar. Jim. And we will be releasing that interview as a podcast very shortly. But I also used it as the basis for a feature, an interview that I've written up for the September issue, which will be out in a couple of weeks.
Written articles,
yeah? Yeah, I actually wrote one. It took me about 3 weeks, and I broke every deadline given to me by the production team. It takes it's hard. You kind of get out of the practice, don't you? Cameron was great, you know. So he made the point in the interview that I found quite remarkable, that movie making is basically the day job. So he makes these $1 billion movies to earn the money to facilitate his deep sea exploration, which is his real kind of passion. That's why he gets out of bed in the morning. So he satisfies himself kind of creatively and artistically with the movies, and then the curiosity is satisfied with the deep sea exploration.
Has he always had a kind of fascination with the deep sea? Was it something that developed later?
Yeah, and it's a weird one, because you kind of assume that someone with such a deep passion for something grew up near the sea or had some prior association, but he didn't. So he grew up in landlocked in Canada, 400 miles from the sea. But he grew up in the 60s, and he described it as this wonderful age of exploration. Obviously, JFK, you know, we're going to the moon. And then people were diving. In 1960, Challenger Deep was dived for the first time by the submersible Trieste. And he remembers poring through National Geographic. He was obsessed. And then it kind of just sparked this lifelong desire to go out and see what's out there, and particularly we'll see what's down there. So he learned to scuba dive quickly. And then, and as soon as he started making some money, his explorations got a bit more significant. And then I think it was in 2012, I hope that's right, he did Challenger Deep for the first time. So that's the deepest point in the world's oceans, at the bottom of the Mariana Trench in the Pacific Ocean. He spent, one of his great quotes was, he said, "I've spent more time on the Titanic than its captain." He has dived it 33 times. And knows everything there is to know about the Titanic. And you might have also seen after Ocean Gate, he was in the press a bit, saying much the same as Rob and Patrick, that that sub was just an accident waiting to happen. So yeah, don't miss I have written a feature. It's in the September issue.
They're rarities. You've got to...
They are rare.
Make sure you find them.
Should we do some quick housekeeping?
Yeah. I think
it'd be good to plug the Bacchus. These are our Artistry and Craft Awards, which we've launched this year. So this is an opportunity to surface some amazing artisanal talent in our industry, some real craft makers. So we celebrate designers, we celebrate manufacturers, shipyards, really. But often what is overlooked is the craft that you see is exhibited on super yachts. It might be a sideboard. It could be an eglamise. That's right. Eglamise panel. It could be a light fixture. It could be just a moment of wonderful craft. So we want to celebrate the people actually making it. So that's why we launched the Bacchus this year, and the nominations are open now.
And it's for yachts, it's for pieces on yachts that have been delivered in the past year.
Yeah.
That's correct, isn't it?
That's right. So the yacht has to be delivered in this calendar year. And we have two awards kicking off this first one. We have an Emerging Artisan of the Year category. So this is someone who is fairly new to the world of craft, but who has displayed amazing abilities in creating something wonderful, either individually as part of a team. And we also have a category called Excellence in Craftsmanship. So this is this award recognizes an object whose construction is, in the judge's view, second to none. So that could be a piece of furniture or a sideboard or a light or whatever it might be. It's quite broad. We want to get as many nominations as we possibly can. We've had a few great ones already. So if you work in the craft field, have had a piece put on a super yacht that's been delivered this year, or are a designer who is working with a wonderful craftsman or woman, please reach out and get in touch and make a nomination. It's a pretty straightforward process.
Shall I move on to our second plug then?
Yeah.
Which is, of course, the Explore Yacht Summit, which is returning to Monaco on November the 9th. We've got the kind of lineup starting to take shape already. So I think I mentioned before that Mike Horn has obviously agreed to come and be our keynote speaker, which would be fascinating to hear from him because he's in the middle of another global voyage at the moment. And then we've also got Richard Wise, who's the President Erasmus of the Explorers Club. And he's kind of done one of those guys that you start Googling him and you just realize he's done everything cool that there possibly is to do on this planet. And I think a bit in space as well. I should check that. Probably most of them have. So he's going to be a great addition. And we've also got Captain Mike Gregory of the Dragonfly Fleets agreed to come and talk. They're doing amazing things and it's, you don't get to hear about it that often. So I'm really excited that he's agreed to come and be part of the day. We'll be releasing some more information in the coming weeks, but yeah, it's looking set to be a good one this year.
I think it's our best lineup ever. I think I'm so impressed with some of the people we've got coming. We've got some owners too of slightly smaller explorers, pocket explorers, coming on stage to talk about their inspiration for building them and what they are going to do with them. We have a live element. We have some very talented designers coming to kind of live sketch, take all the ideas that are discussed on the day and kind of coalesce them into a design package for an explorer yacht. Which is really, really exciting. So a bit more interactivity. But yeah, I think it's really impressive. So again, head to the Boat International website and have a look. It's on November the 9th in Monaco. It's going to be a great, great day. Talk about Monaco.
We've had the preview of the yachts that are going to be at this year's show. And I do have to caveat this, but the preview comes every year and then obviously it all changes and lots of different yachts come in and some yachts that you expect to be there don't make it due to various reasons. But it's exciting to start to see what the lineup might look like. So for the time being, we've kind of gone through the top five in terms of length that are going to be there. As I said, I expect there might be a few slightly larger ones that might sneak in. But first of all, so at the moment, the largest yacht confirmed as attending is the 80-metre Bilgen Leona, which quite cleverly also is our September cover yacht, isn't she?
She is on the September cover with her striking crimson hull. Remarkable looking boat. It's a great cover, the September cover. Yeah, so she will be on show in Monaco. Excited to see her. Her sister ship, Titania, was there a few years ago. Tatiana, rather. I always get those two confused. Tatiana. She was there.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Because apparently she's got Greek statues.
Yeah, the interior. The interior is something else. I was looking at the photos the other day, obviously, for the feature. Remarkable interior.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, excited to hopefully have a look around her in Monaco. Next on the list is 77.7 meter Aria from Golden Yachts. She's got a slightly more contemporary profile than obviously some of her predecessors, Opari, and I always get this name wrong, Optasia.
We've had this debate before, haven't we?
I know.
Optasia.
Optasia.
I mean, I think that's right.
Fine, great, let's roll with it. She also is meant to have a pretty spectacular interior, 250 different finishes used. And apparently some pretty amazing contemporary art in there as well. So she'd definitely be worth trying to get on board during the show. That is then followed up by Alchemy from Rossi Navi, 65.7 meters. She, of course, has got a Vitruvius hull design by Philippe Briand. Lots of lovely alfresco areas is kind of one of her big selling points. She's got more than 330 square meters of outdoor space, including a jacuzzi and lots of sunbathing areas. So sounds like a yacht for me.
Very classic Vitruvius, this boat. Briand just draws such an elegant boat, doesn't he? And this is another example of his supreme skill. Very, very, very lovely looking machine.
Then we've got the 60 meter Entourage, which is of course the second hull of the Amels limited edition series. So I went on Come Together last year at the yacht show and did the yacht report, but this yacht has quite a different feel because Come Together obviously has the kind of geometric windows, whereas on this one they've gone for sort of longer strips which apparently allow sort of additional light into the interior. So it'd be really interesting to kind of contrast the two yachts and see whether they have, I imagine they actually probably have a very different feel. And then last on our list was the debut of the 57 Steel from San Lorenzo. It offers apparently double the volume of its smaller sibling, the 52 Steel, which sounds very impressive. So she's got 1,000 GT of space across her five decks.
Wow.
So yeah, that'd be another interesting one to see how they've kind of, we discuss this a lot, but how they've kind of pushed that interior volume.
Yeah. I know it's not in the top five biggest, but I just want to shout out for Art Explorer as well. So the 46.5 meter sailing catamaran that's currently in build at the Italian Sea Group in Carrara. So we
have they confirmed that she's going to be there?
Well, according to the Monaco Yacht Show, it's going to be there. Actually, I am due to talk to her owner in about 2 hours. He's going to give me a call and give me an update on things because, if it's there, it will be one of the undoubted stars of the show. It's a remarkable boat. It will be the world's biggest sailing catamaran. Huge beam. And the mission of the boat will be is part of what makes it so extraordinary. It will sail around the world, basically exposing areas of the planet that don't usually get to experience exhibitions and art and culture that we're so used to in museums and galleries and things like that. It'll kind of export that and take that around the world in this amazing floating gallery. Fingers crossed. I'm so hoping it makes it.
Yeah, because Katia and I were chatting about it on the podcast when we recorded it a couple of weeks ago, because we were talking about potential WSA yachts for 2024. And we were trying to work out whether she would be a potential nominee or whether almost what she's trying to do is so different, if that makes sense, that she's almost not trying to be a super yacht.
Yeah, you're right. She will have a super yacht function though, so she will qualify, because I think for 2 months of the year it will serve as a super yacht, and that was the original plan. Her owner's Frederick Jusse, a London-based French gentleman who I spoke to a couple of years ago, just before the pandemic. So the interview's online, and you can he's a fascinating guy, and you can read all about why he decided to build this boat and his mission for it. It's all there. I really recommend you going back and looking in the archives for that one. It's on the website. Just search for Art Explorer or his name, Frederick Jousset. Jousset is spelled J-O-U-S-S-E-T. It's a really good insight. Yeah, so, you know, like you said, boats fall in and out of the Monaco lineup constantly. So it's always a bit of a dartboard exercise, you know, just kind of, I hope it's going to be there. Fingers crossed. Come on, the Italian C group. Make it happen. Please, please, please. So on a more London-centric note, we really should mention there's been an update in the story of Fee, the trapped Royal Houseman motor yacht that has been detained in London for quite some time. Sophia, what's the latest?
Yeah, I'm slightly apprehensive to go to this story with you because you always make me a bit anxious as to what you're going to say and what kind of trouble you're going to get us in for. Anyway, I'm just going to read the story and then leave you to your own devices. So the High Court has dismissed an appeal to release the motor yacht, which was arrested in March 2022 as a result of UK sanction law. The appeal was filed in May 2023 and states that three claimants represented by UK firm Jaffra & Co. challenged the legalities of the initial arrest and also the two subsequent arrest reviews. As well as setting aside the sanctions decision, the appeal also sought damages from the government for the time that she's been arrested. The claimants include the registered owner of the vessel, who is a Russian national but does not appear on any UK or EU sanction lists.
So that's crucial, isn't it? The ultimate beneficial owner of this boat is not a sanctioned individual, has other boats which are free to roam Mediterranean waters. So the EU are happy with his use of those boats. And yet,
yet the appeal has been dismissed. So the judgment handed down on the 21st of July. In the judgment, the judge, Sir Ross Cranston, said there was no dispute that the ultimate beneficial owner was a resident of Russia and therefore met the definition of a person connected with Russia. And therefore, as per the 2022 arrest order by the Secretary of State, Grant Schatz, then Secretary of State, Grant Schatz, in his ruling, he also noted that it was legitimate in its aim to detain property from oligarchs in a bid to place pressure on them and indirectly the regime. Detention of the superyacht would send a signal to others about how Russia's activity in Ukraine could affect their lifestyle, he said in the judgment. It's just worth noting that we also did try and get in touch with the Department of Transport, who's declined to comment on this active legal proceeding at this point.
So I find this story frustrating, frankly. Well, I mean, my heart goes out to the captain and crew of the boat, obviously, first of all, who have been stuck in Canary Wharf for the last couple of years, not able to go anywhere. That's not what they signed up for, obviously. So it must be, you know, really, really quite disheartening that this new ruling has been made. Look, I mean, what's happening in Ukraine is appalling. Russia's invasion is appalling. There's absolutely no basis for it. And I think everyone can appreciate that simple fact. The world would be a much better place if Putin hadn't launched his very, very stupid invasion. But this boat's got wrapped up in it. It seems when Russia did invade Ukraine, there was a legitimate exercise undertaken by EU and UK authorities to seize the assets of people linked with the regime. No one will have any complaint with that whatsoever. But there's no evidence that this particular owner has any links. And I think the lawyers representing him made the case that, you know, there was no link between this particular person and the Russian government. But it seemed to me at the time, lots of EU authorities were legitimately arresting sanctioned individuals, super yachts. Grant Schapps, then Secretary of State for Transport, went down to Canary Wharf in this amazing performance, got the selfie stick out, made sure he was shot with Fee in the background. Look how I'm doing it too. I'm arresting a super yacht. But this person's not sanctioned. He's just a rich Russian. The rights and wrongs could be argued about that till the cows come home. But it does seem a slightly nebulous position to take for the government. this is a rich Russian, therefore we can seize his property, despite him being on no sanctions list or having no evidential link to the Putin regime. I find it extraordinary.
Yeah, it's a very fine line, but yeah, I'm surprised by the reading of that judgment. That my understanding, because we've obviously had to cover it a lot, is that it was very clear cut that if you're on the sanction list, then you had a right for all your assets to be seized, and if you weren't, you didn't. And I think this judgment seems to blur that line. But I'm not an international lawyer, and I don't understand enough about the legitimacy and how they're making that judgment.
Well, every time I talk about it, I feel like I'm treading on thin legal ice, because I don't know the law, obviously, in and out. So it's, you know, I have an opinion. I don't know what a lawyer would say about it. But it seems strange to me that this boat is locked up in Canary Wharf. Its captain and crew are stuck, and yet the owner has other boats which are free to roam in Mediterranean waters unimpeded.
So are in the Med, right? They're not somewhere like Dubai or the Maldives. They're in the Med.
In the Med. So the the EU authorities say this person's kosher. He can roam the Med freely in his other boats, and yet, in this act of political showmanship, Grant Shapps locked up free in London, and there it remains. I've just WhatsApped the captain, actually, just saying how sorry it was to hear about it, because he must be tearing his hair out. But anyway, before I get a letter from the government telling me to cease and desist, we should probably move on. Let's do our brokerage picks.
So I followed you down the old classic rabbit hole this week, Stuart. So my pick is the 43-metre Hull Russell 1964 classic motor yacht, Lady Good Girl. So she was built in Scotland and designed by Philip Rhodes. She then underwent a huge refit in 2011 and is described by her broker as one of the few surviving classic motor yachts of her generation. She's also said to have been impeccably maintained since her refit. I think she's had the same owner since then, apparently with sort of virtually unlimited budget. She looks a pretty good nip from the pictures. She's got one of those properly classic interiors, lots of gloss, varnished wood paddling, gilt frames, very comfy, squishy looking armchairs, which I always really enjoy on a yacht. And she's also quite surprisingly spacious for a kind of yacht of this era. She had quite a wide beam, so she's got a 316 GT. And why she caught my eye this week is because she's also just had a 1.45 million euro price drop with Michael White of TWW Yachts. So she's now asking just 6.45 million euros with VAT paid. So they get bargain as well.
Absolute bargain.
I think she's also like a gentleman's yacht, but I didn't let that sway my judgment of her.
I mean, she's got classic lines, isn't she? I love those kind of, the fashion plates and old world charm. She'd sit right at home in Portofino, wouldn't she?
Yeah, you could potter the Med with her very happily, I think.
Very happily. Okay, Lady Good Girl, 6.45 million with VAT paid. It's always a bonus. So I've gone a bit more contemporary. I've gone for the 36-metre Mulder-built Delta One, which has been listed by Martin den Holter of Mulder Yachting, which also obviously manufactured the boat. So there's a couple of reasons I've chosen this boat. She won a World Super Yacht Award in 2018, so our judges loved her. And Irvin Laidlaw, a former World Super Yacht Awards judge, has just taken delivery of its sister ship. I think the sixth one of these 36 meters they've built. And I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, and he was absolutely raving about the shipyard. And this from a man who has built more large yachts than just about anyone else on planet Earth.
Yeah, how many? Because he spoke at the Explorer Yacht Summit last year, didn't he? How many? I can't remember how many yachts he said he'd had. It's more than 30.
I think it was like 47 or something. It was a crazy number of boats. And even he had trouble remembering them all. And he wrote this big list for us for the event. And he goes, I think there's a few others on top of that as well. But he's just had a Gumboat 80 delivered, a 36 meter Mulder. He's got his big Fed ship, obviously. So he's going to use this in the Med. If you're going to take anyone's advice about where to build a boat or what constitutes a really good boat, Lord Laidlaw is as good an authority as anyone. And he really says the Mulder product is first class. So I'm on board. That's enough of an endorsement for me. So Delta One was delivered in 2017 to a design by Claydon Reeves for the exterior and Vickers Studio for the interior. So an all British design team for the exterior and interior. The naval architecture, meanwhile, comes from Van Oosenen. She sleeps 10 guests in 5 cabins and has a crew of 6. Crew quarters, four, six rather. She's got great deck spaces and a really welcoming, cool interior. Just the kind of styling you can see appealing to a lot of people. Very, very easy on the eye. She just carries almost 300 gross tons and hits a top speed of 17 knots thanks to its fast displacement hull from Van Oosenen. It's POA. We don't know what she's asking. But if I was in the market for perfect med cruiser, albeit one with transatlantic range, she would be right at the top of my list. She is lying on the Amalfi Coast. So, you know, not a bad place to pick her up either.
Yeah. Yeah, we mentioned that the gunboat delivery on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. She was out on sea trials. And she was out on sea trials with her racing crew, which I thought was quite cool. I thought there's a man that knows what he wants from his yacht.
Yeah. He's got a Hunt 74, I think. I think it's a 74 that he cruises around Sardinia. I mean, he's boat obsessed. Absolutely boat obsessed. Yeah, he loved his Mulders. Alrighty. Should we have a whip through the headlines?
Yeah, so should we start with that the 76-metre Fedjet new build Project 825 has been spotted on transport through the Dutch canals after completing its technical launch early in July. Construction on the project started last spring, and she's just joined the market with Peter Brown at Burgess. So the yacht represents a pretty rare opportunity to acquire a new build Fedjet in less than half the time of a new order, according to the brokerage firm. Initial renderings show a two-tone exterior by Studio De Voot with distinctive metal railings to contrast the yacht's long line of dark windows. The yacht's interior, meanwhile, has lime-washed wood and stone decorated in earthy tones to give the yacht a modern, contemporary feel with minimal furnishings throughout. She also has a dedicated owner's deck with a private access to a forward terrace, complete with jacuzzi, 2 seating areas around tables that lower to create sunbeds and a touch-and-go helipad. She could be yours as soon as November 2024. So it's a pretty exciting opportunity. This follows news earlier this month that another new build, the 72-metre Project Sakura, was sold in just 6 weeks. So it'll be interesting to see whether she stays on the market any longer, particularly now she's out and about and people can get a proper look at her.
I was blown away when Sakura sold so quickly. Yeah, I mean, these new build Fed ships don't stay on the shelf for long, do they? Next up, we have the fact, or the story rather, that the contents of 82-metre motor yacht Serafsa, now renamed Pure, has sold at auction for a total value of €300,000. So that's the interior contents, basically, of the boat have sold at auction for €300,000. So the Devonport yacht was built in 2008 for Saudi Arabia's Prince Fahad bin Sultan and later presented a prime opportunity for a refit project when she joined the brokerage market in June 2022. Pure was sold the following year with an asking price of $65 million. As part of the preparations for a major refit, the interior contents of the yacht had been cleared out and put up for sale. The opulent but dated interior from which design included a variety of traditional furnishings inspired by the original owner's love for classical Mediterranean glamour. The sale included everything from the mahogany grand piano to the silver mounting salt and pepper shakers used on board. Wow, they really got rid of everything. According to a representative from a Cannes auction house called Pichon and Nudel Deniol.
Yeah, just on that.
Okay, nailed it. Who hosted the proceedings, suitable buyers were found for all 525 lots on offer, with itemized prices ranging from €50 to €11,500. So the refit, with its all-new interior, and new salt and pepper shakers is being managed by JMS Yachting, although more detailed plans remain under wraps. This actually raises, I've always wondered, and I don't know the answer to the question, there's so much refit activity going on, and interiors are cleared out constantly. A lot just end up in shipping containers in shipyards or in industrial parks. I don't know if there's a really active aftermarket for interior items and contents and soft furnishings and wood and stone, all that kind of stuff that gets ripped out of a boat in a rebuild or a refit. Is it sold on? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. The fact that we're covering this as news probably implies not as often as it should be. I mean, it's like definitely that the industry is going to have to look at more closely moving forwards as it tries, you know, tries to become more sustainable. I don't know who bought this, the salt and pepper shakers. I think that's quite cool. Where are these from?
Yeah, I think it's a great story, isn't it?
Well, they used to be a Saudi Arabian prince. Yeah. What a soup you are.
What a great story. Dinner conversation. When conversation's lagging, just points the salt and pepper shaker and says, do you know where that came from?
There we go. Next time there's an auction, we need to be more on it. We can bid remotely.
Yeah, we will. Especially if items are starting at 50 euros. That's
it's within our price range for once.
Finally, you can afford something from the superyacht industry. What's up? What's up last?
So our last story is a bit different, but it was actually our most read news story on the website last week, so I thought we'd better cover it, which is that the 38.5-metre Palmer Johnson motor yacht Tyne has been scuttled in Florida, close to the Fort Pierce Sports Fishing Club, in a bid to turn her into an artificial reef. So the remains of the yacht now sit at roughly 50 metres, and they've had concrete reef modules added to it to promote coral growth. The scuttling initiative is joint collaboration between the Marine Cleanup Initiative, the St. Lucie County Artificial Reef Programme, and the McCully Marine Services. The hull was donated by the Martin County Anglers Club of Martin County, after the yacht had sat unused on land for 17 years. So what a great use for an old yacht.
Yeah, why not? Create a great new dive site, artificial reef, promote marine biodiversity. It's a fantastic idea. It'd be good to check in a couple of years and see if she's got a mountain of coral on her. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, hopefully. Some pretty cool imagery of the yacht being scuttled, which I think is why it did so well. But no, it's a great initiative.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Last up, as is traditional, we have a data story this week, brokerage.
Yeah, so we're going to have a quick look at the Q2 and the H1 numbers for the brokerage market. So we'll start with the H1, the first half of the year numbers in total. So there were 221 sales in the period. Now, this represents a pretty significant reduction compared to the first half of 2022, where there were 304 sales, and 2021, where there were 382 sales. However, as we've discussed many times, we kind of know they were extraordinary years. So when you actually look back at 2020, it's up on that because there are 167, and it's also still up on 2019 when there are 210 sales. So I don't think it shows that the market's slumping. It just seems to be a real kind of realignment that we've discussed before.
I think the key comparison is 2019, I think. 2020, yeah. The first half of 2020 was a bit of a disaster because the market fell off a cliff in kind of April, May, June. And then the second half of that year was wild. And then 2021 and 2022 were just the, you know, blowout years for the brokerage market. But 2019 was still a strong year. And the fact that, and it was a normal year. And the fact that we are, well, normal, we've kind of gone back to normal. But yet this year is still ahead of 2019, I think is quite telling.
Yeah. And then what's interesting, in terms of the total value, it was 2.79 billion euros. Which in comparison to 2020, where it was 2.94, it's only actually a 5% drop. We'll talk about that in a minute. I think that's particularly been boosted by a couple of really high ticket sales in there. And the average asking price for H1 was a very healthy 12.6 million average asking price. If you look at just the quarter, so Q2 on its own, it's a pretty similar pattern. So there were 128 sales, which was lower than 2022 and 2021, but up on 2020 and also significantly up on 2019. And interestingly, the total asking prices for Q2 alone is up 44%. But as I mentioned, I think that's due to particularly the sale of ARPO and a couple of others that we've seen in that last quarter that's really boosted those numbers. I think the general consensus, this will be put together in a premium report for our Boat Pro subscribers. But I think the kind of market consensus seems to be that it's realigning in quite a healthy manner. Everyone seems pretty positive. But I did think it was also a good opportunity to check in on our annual brokerage bet. So I managed to go back and find in the script what we'd said. So I said 404 and you said 460. So if we just double the figures for a year, which I get isn't an exact science, that would take us to 442. Which, if my maths is correct, I think that means I would be closer than you. for once.
No, you wouldn't. Right? Your maths is appalling. No. That's much closer to 460. That's 18 away from 460.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. You still win. Oh. That I spent ages trying to do the maths for that.
You did the last 3 days on the calculator.
Oh, that's why Gabby does the big pro stuff.
Yeah.
Don't trust me with numbers. Okay, oh, right, fine. So you're still winning. You always win. But there's a long way to go. The second 6 months.
That'll be third year on the trot.
Oh,
460. Okay. So I said 460. You said 404. Okay, that's interesting. All right, we're going to keep an eye on that. Another bottle of Lidl bubbles.
On the line. It's all to play
for. On the line. Yeah, big money stakes. I forgot to mention, actually, that data was brought to you by Boat Pro, the yacht industry, super yacht industry's leading market intelligence service. Got to get that in. And that, I think, brings us to a close this week's Boat Briefing. Thank you, Sophia.
Pleasure. Are you just waking up from your jet lag now?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm alive. Yeah. Anytime I talk about Grant Shapps, it gets my blood pumping. not a fan. Anyway, thank you, everybody, for tuning in this week. This has been mixed and produced by Naomi Wilson and Adam Geist and is a production of Boat International Media. Please do go back and have a listen to that Rob McCullum and Patrick Leahy interview about Ocean Gate. It's a really, really interesting one. And we'll be back next week. Have a great one and see you next time.